Welcome to the Story After Show. This is where we'll do a deeper dive into the most recent episodes. Think of this as an extended cut where we'll highlight our favorite insights and parts of stories that we wanted to include but couldn't fit in. Plus, you'll get a behind-the-scenes look into the process of how the team at The Mission builds, creates, and records each episode of the story. And if that wasn't enough, you'll want to stay tuned because we're bringing on surprise guests. The Mission is based in the heart of Silicon Valley, so you never know who might be stopping by.
Welcome to the Story After Show. I'm the host of the story, Chad Grills, and I'm joined by two of my colleagues, Stephanie Postles and Ian Faison. They are the surprise guests in this week's After Show. Ian, welcome to the show.
What's going on, everybody? It's been a fun week here at The Mission. We have four podcast episodes out, have had a ton of great feedback, and it's fun to be here.
Yeah, those four episodes are part of season one, 12 Women Who Changed the World. If you're listening now, maybe you've listened to the first four episodes, maybe you haven't. So just a quick warning, there's going to be massive spoilers ahead as we dive deep into the episodes and do a behind the scenes look. And there is no better guest to do the behind the scenes look with than Stephanie Postles.
Hey everyone. As Ian said, it definitely has been a crazy week getting all these stories published and seeing some really good feedback about the women that we highlighted. But I'm excited to dive into this after show and get some juicy details, as you like to call them.
Absolutely. So Steph is the COO of The Mission. She's the one that keeps the train running on time behind the scenes here. And Ian is our CCO, so our chief content officer. Both, I've known Steph now for 10 years, almost 10 years now.
Yep.
And full disclosure, we're married. And today is our wedding anniversary. So yeah, thank you so much. You can send flowers. I'm just kidding. Don't send flowers. And then Ian, we met last year and we started collaborating, working on some media projects with The Mission, and things have, started to blow up.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty excited to be able to work on this project with Salesforce for the last 6 months and be able to tell these stories of women trailblazers. What's really interesting about The Mission that I think people might not know is that half of our employees are women. And it was really cool to see them bring their personalities into each of these stories to be able to write them and tell them and edit them throughout the production process. And I've had a blast just learning about them. Some of them are household names and some are not. And for everyone here at The Mission, we're just happy to be able to share them with millions of people. Steph, what was your favorite story so far of the four we've published?
Favorite story. So should we go through the four that we published? Just
definitely.
As a quick overview, the first one was The Woman Who Everyone Laughed At. The second episode was The Woman Who Saved Her Country. The third was The Woman Who Lost Everything. And then the fourth one was The Woman in the War. So of those four, I think my favorite was the CJ Walker episode.
Very cool.
She definitely was super inspiring. So she built a huge hair care business back in what was like the 19th
turn of the century.
Yeah. Turn of the century, and she overcame so many things early on. So she came from a family where everyone before her were slaves. Both of her parents died when she was 7, so she was an orphan when she was 7. And moving in with like her sister and her brother-in-law to only get abused afterwards by her brother-in-law. And moving out, getting married and having a kid, and her husband dying right afterwards.
That type of life and struggle is something that's like, I mean, it's easy. We all have first world type problems, but it's hard to fathom going through decades of that type of struggle and then emerging from that in a way that's like non-bitter. We looked at her biography, a bunch of other things. It didn't appear that she was frustrated or angry with anyone or any group in the least. She was just focused on making it and she made it.
What I find remarkable about her story is that, and what's so fun telling the story, her real name is Sarah Breedlove. So she not only transforms her career from, you know, doing laundry to an entrepreneur to employing, you know, 20,000 women, she actually fully transformed her personality. She moved to two different cities. She adopted the name Madam CJ Walker with a level of professionalism. And I think that especially in the day and age where people are building their brands and online brand building and all of that, to see someone actually do that, you know, over 100 years ago, and for the brand that she created to last for 100 years and then exit in 2016 is pretty remarkable that she was able to do that.
Decades after her death, the company was still self-perpetuating. It was going strong, you know, attracting
Sephora
new people.
Yeah. Basically marketing their stuff now or bought their...
That's wild. I mean, that's proof of when you've built a good culture like that, you know, as a leader, then you can step away and the system keeps on going. That's really, really inspiring. I think what's so cool too is not only did she recruit and train tens of thousands of new people and hair care stylists and everyone like that, but she did so without any type of like technology. All the comforts that we have right now, she basically didn't have that. It was just straight up one-on-one interactions in the real world. And that's where everybody can today, I guess, falls in the trap of thinking, you know, that's not scalable. I don't want to do it. But what Madam CJ Walker did was, you know, she just focused on the one-on-one interactions first. She got those right. And over time, those compound.
And I think this is a good example too of one person really actually changing the world. Like she employed all these women. She made all these like philanthropic efforts of like building a YMCA or donating a ton of money to have the first black YMCA.
Yeah, she started YMCA
she's donated a lot of money.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but she's done like a lot of different things like that, that sometimes people can be like, oh, how did one person actually like change the world by building a company? Well, look at her story and you'll see that she definitely changed the lives of like a lot of people.
Definitely. There's like science behind that. There's plenty of stats that show after school programs and YMCA's, you know, decrease crime and, you know, juvenile delinquency or whatever you want to call it in those areas. So that's, yeah, super cool.
One of the things I find fascinating about the way that she went about it is, you know, people talk about luck and how kind of you have to get lucky and have certain breaks. But in her story, she was washing people's clothes, and the one person that she ran into happened to be in the line of work that she wanted to be in, which was selling hair care products. So she took that quote unquote luck and turned it into a positive where she learned everything she could about the business from that person and then left to build her own brand. And I think that that's something that's really unique to a lot of entrepreneur stories, but specifically with her, she had no formal training. She had no background in this. She just had a passion and a personal problem that her hair was falling out when she was 20. And that type of like visceral reaction when you could see your hair falling out and the personal problems of your community, feeling that pain and then knowing that there is kind of nothing that serves you, allows you to go from something that you know nothing about to being essentially a world expert in a matter of 10 years.
Yeah, it's when your hair's falling out, that's like a powerful incentive and stake to figure out why it is and stop it or reverse it. Really, really cool. Ian, what was your favorite story and why?
So I think the story that really resonated with me the most was the story of Corey, aka Corazon Aquino. And the reason why I was just so blown away by her story was, number one, I can't remember hearing it in school. So I was, you know, born in 1986, which is when all of this was happening. And it is absolutely remarkable that her story is not a household name to every single person in America. The fact that she was the first female president in any Asian country is alone an achievement that I think is, you know, going to stand the test of time. But the way in which she did it, from like being a self-described housewife, from the fact that she was, you know, doing all of the things that, quote, politicians don't do, and yet was able to overcome personal tragedy, her husband being murdered, all of those things to be able to lead a movement and a revolution is just so exceptional. And part of the thing that like we want to do with these stories is make them household names. Like everyone should know her story. And that was just really cool for me.
Yeah, this is a name that I didn't know, actually.
I mean, it's just, same here. It's just one of those things where you hear the story and it's like, why didn't anyone tell me about this, you know, about this when I was younger? And that's what is really exciting, because especially with young people now, there's so many like, you know, young girls, young boys that are listening to podcasts, and it's really cool to be able to tell them, you know, stories where it's like, yeah, it's not filled with violence. It's not filled with murders. It's just filled with achievement. And moreover, the end results of a lot of these heroes and heroines that we're talking about feel like they're not accessible. But meanwhile, like all of us are at a starting place now that mirrors a lot of the places that they started. And that's, I mean, for me personally, I think that's what's like so exciting about these stories is it's not like, you know, the advertising that's designed to make you feel bad about yourself. It's stories designed to make you, you know, look at the surroundings, what you have in front of you and just take advantage of it. So
Yeah. And I think also pulling apart just her story individually is really good from her husband, because a lot of times when you do stuff with your husband, whether it's starting businesses or things like that, you can kind of get lumped together and like, you did this together. And I thought it was really nice that we pulled out almost everything about her. Her husband was a piece of the story, but here's like the things that we really want to highlight about her and show all the crazy things that she did after all the heartache that she had.
Definitely. And yeah, so let's take it on a personal, like personal dive here. But so that's one of the reasons why Steph kept her last name, and one of the reasons why I was, you know, very supportive of that, because I've definitely, you know, seen firsthand how easy that is. Or can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that Chad and I started the mission together a long time ago, and things that can kind of get hazy about like when we might go out, most people will always assume that like Chad did it on his own and I was just helping on the sidelines. And I think that when we got married and talked about taking your last name, we didn't want people to assume that I was any bit successful for anything that I've done, because I was on your coattails or just helping you with things, like not actually running the business, just being a helper. So yeah, I think that's definitely hits close to home where, as a woman, sometimes if you do partner with your husband, you always have to try and show people, or at least prove that you're, you know, an equal part of it and not just the helping housewife.
Definitely. Because I mean, like that's one of the stereotypes that I feel like is still really prevalent. And yeah, it's still out there quite a bit.
Yep.
Oh, cool. So that's, yeah, two of our favorite stories from the list.
What about you, Chad?
The first were.
We're going to basically cover all of them at this point now. 3 out of 4. And if you leave one out.
Yeah. So, I mean, just as a writer, somebody that's like really passionate about reading and books, the Suzanne Collins episode 4, The Woman in the War, is, just one that's like really powerful. And yeah, just really, really cool. If you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out. But Suzanne Collins is generally just a really underrated writer. And she got her start late. She started writing in TV, and she was able to take that from Nickelodeon writing to really serious writing for teens. I think that's super interesting that she started out doing something that, just where she was learning her craft. It's not like writing for Clarissa Explains It All is going to lead to, you know, a strong philosophical statement. A lot of people would look at that job and be like, you know, where are you going with that?
That show was on point. I loved it.
Yeah, shouts to Clarissa.
big shout outs to Clarissa.
And what was the other one she wrote?
Shelby Woo.
Yeah, the Mystery Files of Shelby Woo.
And Clifford. Big Red Dog. I mean, that's just one of those situations where it's so easy to look back. It's so easy to look back from now and say, well, that was the path. But I guarantee you that there were people in her life that were like, you're never going to be
100%
successful writer. You're never going to create something that, you know, is going to move mountains, you know? And that's part of the thing that obviously with our storytelling, hopefully we can accomplish. And we see, you know, the feedback that we get from readers, but with her, there's no feedback when you're writing a TV show in the 90s.
Writer's room with like a dozen other writers that are like, you know, it's pretty cutthroat, especially back in those days. Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that also saying that kids television is not meaningful. And I think that that's part of the knock on the kind of like YA or young adult culture where, oh, okay, whether it's, you know, Twilight or whether it's any of those type of books, it's like, well, it's a bit reductive or there's pieces of it that don't necessarily resonate. What's so cool about Suzanne Collins is that she tackled a ridiculously, ridiculously complex topic in a way that most people don't do. And I think you really drove the point home in that. But people really don't understand how difficult it is to be able to tell a story that has an entertainment value that carries a huge message to kids that are 12.
Yes. And I mean, the most important message from that, if we had to simplify it to one thing, is that war doesn't end well. So horrible spoiler alert coming if you haven't read the trilogy, but it doesn't end well for any of the participants. And Ian and I are both veterans, and it's a message that's like very refreshing to hear rather than all the movies and TV series that young children are typically exposed to where war is somehow like glorified or treated as like a great adventure. Like nothing could be further from the truth. And that's one of the things that was like just really exciting for me about that story. But what'd you think of it, Steph?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought it was great. You think that you know a lot of things just based on like what the media has told you or what you've read online or any of that kind of stuff. But once you start actually digging in deep to the biography behind some of these women, you're like, wow, there's a lot that I didn't know, didn't think about. And I love Hunger Games and watched all the movies, and I didn't read it like Ian did. He's an all-star. But yeah, you just kind of like see a different perspective on everything. And yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, very cool.
So shout out to Sarah Blakely. We love your story as well. Yeah. It's hard to pick a favorite of the first four. So, you know, they're all amazing. But I wanted to touch on a few things from the Sarah Blakely story that are particularly interesting. My girlfriend used to work at Disneyland, so I know the struggle of someone who is working at Disneyland. And as someone who used to work, you know, outdoor at a water park, I fully understand. You know, my buddy was the tube guy.
Sounds glamorous.
Yeah. So minimum wage, giving away tubes. And like that stuff really resonated with me where, you know, she couldn't play Goofy and then she's selling fax machines. But it's just, there was no way to know back then that she was going to be able to build something so fast and so amazing. But again, this goes back to like all of her friends and the people around her are second guessing her every move. And for a lot of people, that's just how it is. Like it's, your book is not written. And, you know, now we look back and she's, all of these stories, like they did so many things after we kind of finished telling the story.
Sure.
They went on to do a ton of other things. And I mean, Sarah does stuff all day, every day in a bunch of different worlds.
Her foundation, investing, new companies, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Spanx is, you know, an absolutely thriving business. So it's, even her book is not yet written. And I think that that's the most interesting place to look from one snapshot in time and say, look at how all of this happened. And for her to be able to visualize that, you know, she wanted to be on Oprah when she was 15 years old and being able to do that, I don't think people really understand what like that visualization
definitely
stuff actually means.
And holding that vision for years, you know, and decades, that's pretty powerful. And like, there's a great quote that if you're right or if you're correct in something, you're a majority of one. And that's, you know, you don't accomplish something like she did if you are wishy-washy the whole time. There, of course, there's going to be moments in like, you know, dark nights of the soul where you doubt things, but generally you have to be inclined to believe that it can happen for like an extended period of time.
And but I think it's also good that she held the idea to herself because a lot of friends and family, I mean, she didn't tell anyone while she was developing it. And I mean, unintentionally, maybe you can have a lot of people hate on your idea and a lot of people just don't start because, you know, you tell them your idea and everyone tells you why it's bad.
Exactly.
And,
they test things too early. Way too early with like all the wrong people.
Yeah. So I like that she kept it to herself because that can be hard when you're starting a company, starting anything. Like you want to go out and tell everyone, be like, here's what I'm working on. Let me tell you everything. But yeah, that's really baller to keep it to yourself.
Definitely.
Do you think, and this would be a great question to ask her, and I'm sure that she has tons of experience on this. Do you think that part of her like apprehension was that it was kind of like number one, an unmentionable, and number two, a women's product? I mean, is that something that you just think like, not only is it kind of sound silly, but also like, how do you, like, what's the road to success? Or do you think it's just like anything new?
I think anything new. I mean, I think it's hard being maybe in business when back in the time she was going back and like pitching a lot of male investors and trying to get the support from them. So I think that's one big hurdle that you're trying to face of like trying to convince men why something's important that like they don't know about. They've probably, I mean, a lot of times wives won't talk about that kind of stuff that they're doing behind the scenes anyways. And you have someone coming and pitching you about something that you don't get. But then, yeah, I think building any new idea is just hard in general, though,
definitely,
regardless of if you're a woman, man, anything.
And I'm sure it was hard for the reasons you mentioned, Ian. But at the same time, I think that anything that's new, that is a genuinely better idea than what has previously existed, or any idea that is outside the realm of what somebody else might be able to imagine or you know, put forth, is going to be threatening. And that's just like unfortunately, just a rule of life. So yeah, that's the biggest advice to take from that is just like, it's okay to keep things private and just build them to the point where others aren't going to deny them or shoot them down. Basically get them to the point where others are going to realize like the value. And it takes a while.
I cannot imagine the WTF moment when she showed the red box of what that is to, when all of her competitors saw that, when people in the market saw that and were like, wait, this looks nothing like anything else out there. And she's like, yeah, I know. That's why it's flying off the shelves.
Completely.
Yeah,
that's why it stood out. And yeah, 100%. Really, really cool.
All right. So next up, we thought it'd be fun to do a quick Q&A with the CEO of the mission, Chad. It's going to be super, super rapid fire. And we get to ask you whatever we want.
You're on the hot seat.
Yes.
Sounds good.
So my first question is, why were these women chosen?
These women span all walks of life and all professions. They're a pretty good representation of different careers, different non-traditional careers, some very traditional ones. And we felt after we ran it by many women and men that these 12 women stood out for a number of different reasons. And number one was they were not handed anything. All of them started from a place that is accessible to almost everyone listening. So of course, there's always going to be some like maybe genetic advantages or something like that. But generally, all of these women started from the bottom. Now they're here.
So, I knew you were going to say that.
I did not.
I'm sorry, guys. We'll get better with the jokes as we go.
That's great. Is there any little hints that you want to give about next week's women who are coming?
Oh, I was going to ask about teasers.
I was just thinking about that.
So any teasers without revealing the identities? What can we say? We'll do a little bit more STEM next week. That's STEM pioneers and some inventors, and then one more author that I really like that I think our listeners are going to love.
Yep, that's a good teaser.
Okay, so why mini biographies?
Biographies are powerful, but they're only really, really powerful if you explore what happens after you consume a lot of biographies. So many of us get in school, we learn that reading is something that you're done when you're told, and we generally either start to not like it very much, or we do it on our own. And it's really challenging to sit down and make yourself read biographies. They're often like really hard to get into. Sometimes they're too long. And at the end of the day, though, if you look at the lives of successful people, whether it's the ones that most people might be familiar with, so Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, they all cite biographies as being crucial to their success. Oprah, Sarah Blakely, all these people were listening to biographies of people who achieved something of note, people who had a life that other people were willing to pay just to hear, like hence the biography or memoir that they wrote. And all of these people have achieved something great, cite historical fiction and biographies as being crucial to their success. And the reason why questions are always hard, but you can get into the fact where you're reading stories about somebody who did something, of note, and it's just so, so empowering when you're walking in their shoes without the end result being present. So when you're learning all the backstory, the story behind the story, that's where things just get really interesting. And you start to discover that you might have more in common with famous people, great inventors, achievers than you might think.
Yeah, and if someone's already had like pitfalls or breakthroughs or things like that, why not learn from someone's entire life and say, hey, I'm kind of going down a similar path.
Definitely. Like, you can soak up all that life experience.
Yeah. You remember it a lot more, I think. I mean, I feel like every biography I remembered, or every one that I've read, I remember way more from that, where I can like recall those lessons in like day-to-day life.
Definitely.
I would say one of the pieces that most people kind of overlook is those micro moments in time where stuff went really bad for someone. And even the people that, are your heroes went through days, weeks, months, years of their life where stuff was really bad. And whether that is, family members passing, whether that's divorce, whether that's just going through a rough patch or personal relationships or feeling isolated, those moments happen to everyone. And
always get left out of the end result, conveniently left out.
The media definitely paints a picture of like overnight success. Every single person you've ever heard about, like they're super smart, and that's why they are.
The culture of instant gratification doesn't take kindly to stories of how it actually happened. That's for sure.
I mean, even if you look at the Suzanne Collins, you yada yada, not you, but
no, you I, in the try not to yada yada, but sometimes
in the story, we yada yada like a decade of her life.
Completely.
Like, and but when you're 35 years old,
same routine every single day, going into the writer's room and having, 10 or 12 other people tell you that your ideas are horrible and like coming up with better and better ones. That's the type of stuff that like nobody wants to do, but it's accessible right now. That amount of critique on your ideas is what's going to force you to come up with ideas that eventually nobody in the writer's room can ignore. Nobody is going to turn their nose up at, because at the end of the day, they all have a job to do, which is make the show successful. And it's only when you have a long period of time that you can build a track record where you start to look back and it's like, I was right about that a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And it's like, that type of buildup is just so cool to see.
Next question. Why do we hide the identity?
This is really interesting. So you don't want to know the person's identity because the instant you do, you immediately, if you know their story, you associate the end result or the portrayal that mainstream media has kind of given you of this person, the story that they want you to believe. And that's disempowering when you are constantly like, you know, inundated with these messages of idols and be more like this person or more like that person all day long. You forget the fact that how they got to where they're at, that's where it's exciting because it's something that might be accessible to you right now. So when you strip away the person's identity, you can kind of like project yourself in their own situation. It's just like a fun, not just a thought experiment, but it's just really valuable for anybody who wants to see what greatness looks like in the early days.
And I think Sarah Blakely is a good example of this because when you first told me we were highlighting her, she's one that so many people have covered and you feel like you already know her story. And like, I even fell into the trap of being like, yep, I know she has a crazy big business now. And, you know, it's maybe not as interesting as like someone that I don't know about. But then when I started reading the outline that you and the rest of the team at The Mission put together of like her story, it made me realize it's actually good not knowing who it was up front because you get way deeper into the story and their back life and want to know more. And then when you find out who it is, you're like, wow, I could actually do that same path and get where they're at today. And it's not as unachievable as what I maybe originally thought when I just heard that name brand, basically.
And by withholding that identity too, now the lead up of all the stories is similar and listeners are going to be able to tease out patterns. And that's where it gets really, really valuable because in the case of like Sarah Blakely and other great CEOs, you see that commonality of they all had sales jobs. Not only did they have sales jobs, but they had bad sales jobs. They had to sell something door to door that 90% of the people who answered the door did not want and would never ever consider purchasing from a door to door salesman or saleswoman. So that's what is just so fun to consider is like, again, this gets left out of the mainstream media coverage of technology, CEOs, and like very successful, wealthy people. They all did sales and they did it early on and they did a decade of just soul crushing crap jobs.
Other than Chris Harrison, who do you model yourself after?
Are we talking about Chris Harrison from The Bachelor?
Yeah, the host of The Bachelor.
This other is how than, Chad gets oh, me excited
Ian
about
Ian found
notes.
Me out. So, oh man, I guess I just have to admit it on air to everybody. But the after show is modeled after The Bachelor after show with Chris Harrison. Is that the right? I'm just kidding.
That is his
it's
name.
Not, but
Chad really enjoys it when I watch The Bachelor and thinks it's very good for my mind. He's so supportive.
Yeah, if you love after shows like that, maybe this will turn into that. Hopefully not, but
the most dramatic we'll season see. Ever of the story. All the women will know that. Maybe some men. I have a good question. Was there anything that happened in the studio that you thought was funny, bloopers, some of the quotes that are up on our wall right now about things that either our producer Max over there has said or anyone else on the team that we want to highlight?
We'll share more of those later, especially as we start to do more video. Unfortunately, we got to clean up the studio a little bit. We're moving in that direction. So we'll show you behind the scenes soon.
Okay.
So Ian is sitting across from me with a smirk on his face. So Ian, what's up?
He's probably thinking a lot.
No, I got nothing.
I don't believe it.
Well, so I will say that I'll give a shout out to Max, our producer, who the other day had a run-in with Yelp. Shout out to Yelp.
Okay, this is a solid quotable for everyone out there.
Of downloading and re-downloading the app when we were on our team offsite. And he said that, I was like, why did you delete the app? And he's like, it takes up too much mental clutter on my phone.
And he called it ugly.
Which is pretty great. Sorry, Yelp. Too much mental clutter.
I love it. Sometimes you gotta, clear the space.
Next question. What are some of the inspirations for this storytelling method and how we're telling these stories and people in history that we've kind of looked at?
Definitely. So the format is, if it's familiar to you, that's because it's familiar to a lot of people. It's the same format that was used for, I think, 40 years on one of the most successful radio shows of all time called The Rest of the Story with Paul Harvey, a classic show where generally like just the identity is withheld until the end. And it's easy to glance at that and be like, oh, this show's modeled after The Rest of the Story by Paul Harvey. But it's way harder to look back at the fact that, I mean, this is how grandparents told stories. I can remember my grandfather telling stories like this. I can remember my grandmother telling stories like this where if you tell everybody everything, all the details up front, you don't have room for nuance. You don't have room for struggle, and you don't develop patience that comes from, you know, waiting until the end of the story, waiting for the moral or what, you know, whatever the case is. So
as long as we don't follow the method of my grandfather, who says, don't let the details get in the way of a good story.
Yes.
Let's just not do that.
Yeah. So we're striving, like, obviously we can't get all the details perfectly right. Especially because in a lot of these cases, you know, nobody was, you know, third party impartial observer was there monitoring everything. So we do our best to get the facts right, but it's historical fiction. So
another pretty cool shout out to Mike Rowe and The Way I Heard
Oh, absolutely.
He does a phenomenal job of these in a shorter, kind of like intricate way that only Mike Rowe can tell stories in The Way I Heard It. That's another piece that I think we draw a lot of in homage, as he would say, to that. And then the other thing too is, you know, Joseph Campbell and Hero's Journey, obviously, for like the formatting of these, and just kind of talk about that.
Yeah. So The Hero's Journey is very cool because Joseph Campbell, a writer, philosopher, thinker, noticed that as he studied thousands of myths across the world and across time, that this one recurring structure kept appearing again and again and again. And he coined The Hero's Journey to talk about that structure. And what's exciting about The Hero's Journey is that it maps to the real world. So the whole idea of starting in the regular world where things are a bit ordinary, and then you get a call to adventure, something exciting happens or a challenge looms, and you inevitably pull back from that challenge because you can think of, you know, how painful it's going to be, what it's going to require of you. And then you might meet a mentor or get some type of special advice or something wild happens that you didn't expect. Then you cross a threshold into a new world. Then we'll go through the whole thing, but you get the idea. What was fascinating is this same operating system for achievement. If you look back at your own life, if you print out or pull up The Hero's Journey, just Google The Hero's Journey and look at it, you might notice a similar path of events that preceded anything of note in your life. So personally, you know, I look back and I see this pattern play out just again and again. And that's why we use the format for stories.
I think it's fun also to highlight how many movies and stuff all, and books and things like that, follow this exact format.
Oh, definitely. So look up, the majority of books are 17 chapters long. Sometimes they have some extra ones thrown in, but they map perfectly to each stage of the hero's journey. Pull up Harry Potter, pull up The 4-Hour Work Week, and just hold them side by side and you'll be blown away.
Yep. Agree.
And I think that at this point we can officially say that our quick hits Q&A is no longer quick.
That was an astute observation. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good way to wrap it up. So this was the after show, and hope everyone enjoyed it. We will be seeing you next week after we launch our next 4 episodes of some pretty awesome women.
Thanks so much for listening. Stay tuned Monday through Friday, Monday through Thursday,
yep,
new stories. And we're going to try to make the after show a every Friday occurrence. So if you like this, let us know. Leave a rating and review, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to the Story After Show. Stay tuned for the next one with new guests and the latest updates about our launch contest. See you next time.